Blog Talk Radio.
This is Our Common Ground. Tonight at Our Common Ground, America participates in military action against Libya. Libya and labor. What does it mean? Open mic. At Our Common Ground, speaking truth to power and ourselves.
Left unchecked, we have every reason to believe that Gaddafi would commit atrocities against his people. Many thousands could die. A humanitarian crisis would ensue.
That this is more complex than what you think. Go into Libya if you want to.
These terms are not subject to negotiation.
The Libyans do not want foreign occupation on their land. And when you make that kind of move, if you're not careful, you'll unite the Libyan people against you. And again, Gaddafi wasn't sitting in any tent twiddling his thumbs over these last 10 years. This man has been investing in African development. This man has been moving throughout Africa. This man has friends all over the world. He may not be your friend, but if you take him out and kill him like he's some rotten fella that wants to kill his own people, what did you do in Waco? What did you do when your people rose up? Did you talk them out of it? No. They had weapons. You bombed them. What did you do in Philadelphia with the movement? Did you talk them out of their home, or did you bomb them? We didn't hear any outcry from you religious hypocrites that love the lives of human beings. You're a liar and a hypocrite. And I warn my brother, don't you let these wicked demons move you in a direction that will absolutely ruin your future with your people in Africa and throughout the world. They don't like the way you handle Mubarak. They don't like the way you're handling the situation in the Arab world. So I would advise you to be careful and move with wisdom and skill.
Let me be clear. These terms are not negotiable. These terms are not subject to negotiation. Let me be clear. These terms are not negotiable. These terms are not subject to negotiation. These terms are not subject to negotiation.
Bring only to the Undertaker. Oh! He's loving and understanding. Tell me, he's got no place for him today. They say we must fight to keep our freedom. The Lord knows there's got to be a better way. Oh!
This is Our Common Ground. Tonight at Our Common Ground, America participates in military action against Libya. Libya and labor. What does it mean? Open mic. At Our Common Ground, speaking truth to power and ourselves.
Left unchecked, we have every reason to believe that Gaddafi would commit atrocities against his people. Many thousands could die. A humanitarian crisis would ensue.
That this is more complex than what you think. Go into Libya if you want to.
These terms are not subject to negotiation.
The Libyans do not want foreign occupation on their land. And when you make that kind of move, if you're not careful, you'll unite the Libyan people against you. And again, Gaddafi wasn't sitting in any tent twiddling his thumbs over these last 10 years. This man has been investing in African development. This man has been moving throughout Africa. This man has friends all over the world. He may not be your friend, but if you take him out and kill him like he's some rotten fella that wants to kill his own people, what did you do in Waco? What did you do when your people rose up? Did you talk them out of it? No, they had weapons. You bombed them. What did you do in Philadelphia with the movement? Did you talk them out of their home or did you bomb them? We didn't hear any outcry from you religious hypocrites that love the lives of human beings. You're a liar and a hypocrite. And I warn my brother, don't you let these wicked demons move you in a direction that will absolutely ruin your future with your people in Africa and throughout the world. They don't like the way you handle Mubarak. They don't like the way you're handling the situation in the Arab world. So I would advise you to be careful and move with wisdom and skill.
Let me be clear. These terms are not negotiable. These terms are not subject to negotiation. Let me be clear. These terms are not negotiable. These terms are not subject to negotiation. These terms are not subject to negotiation.
Thank you for being here with us on this special night for Our Common Ground, a special edition dealing with the issue of Americans' military intervention and action, participating with the so-called, here's that word again, coalition in Libya. Following the vote at the UN Security Council, the United Kingdom, France and the United States have embarked on military action against Gaddafi's forces in Libya. They have been careful to include a few Arab states in this new coalition of the willing, but the three countries are the driving force behind the imposition of a no-fly zone and the attacks on the government's military positions and forces. Yet among the permanent and non-permanent members of the council who were asked to authorize all necessary measures to protect civilians rebelling against the regime, the BRIC powers of Brazil, Russia, India, and China are conspicuously absent. The implications of this Security Council vote will be far greater than just what happens to the Gaddafi regime, for it also tells us something about the role of the new candidates for global leadership. Once again, we thank you for joining us here at Our Common Ground. We've got a lot of work to do tonight, Alfo. Thank you for joining me once again. How are you?
Well, good evening, Janice. How are you this evening?
Okay, we're going to keep these mics open tonight, and you might want to write down our number, 347-839-852. In this first page, we're going to be dealing with the issue of Libya. Are you with us or are you against us? And we're going to be looking at the formation of what this is all about. Listen up.
I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today, and he said, this is a memo that describes how we're going to take out seven countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran. The truth is about the Middle East is, had there been no oil there, it would be like Africa.
Concern of the United States in the region is basically oil. It was recognized since the 1940s that the Arabian Peninsula is the major source of energy, cheap, easily accessible energy for the next several generations, and that whoever controls that oil will basically dominate the world.
Of the United States.
Our fellow citizens, at this hour, American and coalition forces are in the early stages of military operations to disarm Iraq, to free its people, and to defend the world from grave danger. On my orders, coalition forces have begun striking selected targets of military importance to undermine Saddam Hussein's ability to wage war. These are opening stages of what will be a broad and concerted campaign.
The entire region could be destabilized, endangering many of our allies and partners. The calls of the Libyan people for help would go unanswered. The democratic values that we stand for would be overrun. Moreover, the words of the international community would be rendered hollow. That's why the United States has worked with our allies and partners to shape a strong international response at the United Nations. Our focus has been clear: protecting innocent civilians within Libya and holding the Gaddafi regime accountable. Yesterday, in response to a call for action by the Libyan people and the Arab League, the UN Security Council passed a strong resolution that demands an end to the violence against citizens. It authorizes the use of force with an explicit commitment to pursue all necessary measures to stop the killing, to include the enforcement of a no-fly zone over Libya. It also strengthens our sanctions and the enforcement of an arms embargo against the Gaddafi regime. Now, once more, Muammar Gaddafi has a choice. The resolution that passed lays out very clear conditions that must be met. The United States, the United Kingdom, France, and Arab states agree that a ceasefire must be implemented immediately. That means all attacks against civilians must stop. Gaddafi must stop his troops from advancing on Benghazi, pull them back from Ajibia, Misrata, and Zawiya, and establish water, electricity, and gas supplies to all areas. Humanitarian assistance must be allowed to reach the people of Libya. Let me be clear, these terms are not negotiable. These terms are not subject to negotiation. If Gaddafi does not comply with the resolution, the international community will impose consequences, and the resolution will be enforced through military action.
Американская фирма Transceptor Technology приступила к производству компьютеров «Персональный спутник».
Well, Alpha, it's clear that the president has found his power in global military action. And tonight we're going to be asking, what are your thoughts about this action? What are your thoughts about what happened at the UN? What are your thoughts about the absence of the African Union in the coalition of the willing? And what would be your advice to this president? Alpha, that's a lot of questions. I think that many people don't have the basic the base of information to answer them. But I think that every American citizen has the obligation to think through this action. So we're going to be asking our listeners tonight to call 347-838-9852. What's your recap on this situation, Alpha?
Well, Janice, it's a rock and a hard spot for this president. Here you have him offering up cuts for heating assistance while we have money to drop bombs and to fire Tomahawk missiles. And it's, you know, it's a war. It's a war. It's affordable. It's poor people and education and children and help for the needy. We just can't afford it. We have to capitulate to what the Republicans want, and that's balancing a budget or dropping a deficit on the backs of the least and the last. And that is one of the biggest problems here. You have a situation where he was damned if he did and damned if he didn't. You know, they weren't poised to go into Egypt had Mubarak began a brutal massacre of his people. But all I've heard on the mainstream media sphere is that innocent people are dying. Well, innocent people will always die when there are bombs on that magnitude being dropped in a civilian area. But what I don't understand and what I don't hear is the massive criticism of these brutal dictators who use people as human shields. There were reports that he was using allies. He had taken allies from the protesters, and he was placing them at these facilities and using them as human shields. And the people who are criticizing this president for that seems to have a feigned indignation when it comes to pointing a finger at such a brutal dictator. But he really has hands full. He can't sell this either way.
Well, one of the things I want to remind you out there is that this is the first in the history of the United States major assault on an African country. And what is interesting, I find, is this today that the attack on Tripoli came 8 years to the date on the attack on Baghdad. At the bottom of all of this is that Libya has the highest quality and quantity of oil on the planet. Our president, just as George Bush, just as we all know, we have to be very, very tentative about how we listen to saying no boots on the ground. So far, Gaddafi's war against the people that they speak of has been on the ground. So how do we fight a war on the ground? Now, there's another question that I would like for our audience, if someone could call us and give us some insight into this, is the relationship. You know, a lot of people say, clearly Gaddafi has become a madman, and he is a dictator, and he's a brutal dictator. But Gaddafi has given more support to sub-Saharan Africans on the continent than any other dictator in the world, or president in the world. And we also have to remember that Muammar Gaddafi financed the Million Man March. Muammar Gaddafi gave more money than any other country in the effort to free Nelson Mandela and to put down apartheid in South Africa. He was a financier of the anti-apartheid movement in this world. But there still are some questions about the relationship between sub-Saharan Africans and Arabs, and we have to look at that question. I'm hoping that sometime during this program tonight, and it was such short notice, Imara Woods, who is the chair of African Action and the co-director of Foreign Policy in Focus, a think tank without walls, and an expert. She designed and implemented the strategic campaign around the Monterey Financing for Development Conference, and she is an expert on development policy at and practice in the Mideastern countries, and we're hoping that she will be able to join us. We're going to go to our phones, Alpho. First off the bat is 505. I respect you. What's your thoughts on all of this?
Well, the whole Libya situation, it just seems to me that...
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from New Mexico, from Albuquerque. A little
okay,
away
good.
From that.
Thank you for joining us.
But the whole Libya situation just, it somehow reeks of corruption for me. Like, my main problem with it is that, you know, they're talking about, we're going in there, we've ordered military strikes as of earlier today, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And they say, well, we're not going into Libya to kill Gaddafi or capture Gaddafi, but at the same time, we're not going into Libya to, you know, fight the rebels or capture the rebels. So what are we really going into Libya to do? We're in there like basically as a human shield, and they're saying we're there to protect the civilians because, well, you know, Gaddafi, he has a military force. He has airplanes, and that's been the main, like, contention point for the rebel forces is they're saying, well, you know, we can't fight the air forces. So
well,
basically we're going
it's
in there.
Clear that. Let
no,
me
go
try
ahead.
To sort this out. It is clear that
uh-huh.
we are that certainly democracy is a smokescreen for all of this.
Yeah.
The idea that our president is talking about creating eliminating the barriers of humanitarian care and delivery of humanitarian efforts into the region, into the country, is another smokescreen. But
uh-huh.
one of the things that we have to understand that the Western response to the Libyan crisis has not, as you are getting to, has not addressed how this fundamental tension between a responsibility to protect vulnerable people and a global order based on the principles of national sovereignty can be resolved with the full participation of the emerging BRIC powers as well as the established transatlantic one. We know that this is about OIL. Stupid.
Oil, yes. Absolutely. I was telling somebody last week, it wasn't last week, it was a few weeks ago, when the Egyptian thing was happening, right? When everybody in Egypt was revolting and civilians were getting killed in the streets, and somebody asked me, well, why aren't the United States involved in that? Why didn't we get in there? I said, well, you know, if the United States knew that, you know, Egypt had as much oil underneath it as, you know, Libya or Iraq or Afghanistan, then we would probably be there.
Well, that's exactly what Wesley Clark mentioned in the clip that I played earlier, if you were here. But one of the questions that I don't see a lot of people covering is the assessment of the UN Security Council resolution in 1973 and was adopted on March 17th. It's phrased in a way that takes into consideration the request by the uprising for a no-fly zone. The opposition explicitly called for a no-fly zone on the condition that no foreign troops be deployed on Libyan territory, and I simply don't see how that's going to be possible given what we've done.
Yeah, well, it's not possible given what we've done. You're absolutely right there.
So a no-fly zone, essentially, New Mexico, is as Alpha has posted in the chat room, a no-fly zone are unicorns farting glitter. I like that, Alpha.
Yeah, that's brilliant. It really is.
And one of the things that we have, there are so many things. For instance, there is some provoking that has gone on.
Uh-huh.
And who has been doing the provoking over the last month in Libya? It wasn't a violent protest and uprising a month ago.
Absolutely.
The other question is, I'm going to play for you. I'm not going to hold you on the line, New Mexico, but I'm going to play for you a letter that was issued by Muammar Gaddafi in regard to the United States' response to what's going on in his country. And I thank you for your call, and we'll try to get some other callers to address your questions. Thank you so
Absolutely.
Much.
The first letter from the brother leader of the revolution to President Barack Hussein Obama. To our son, His Excellency, the President of the United States, Barack Hussein Obama. I have said to you before that even if Libya and the United States of America enter into a war, God forbid, you will always remain my son, and I have all the love for you as a son, and I do not your image to change with me. I want you to remain with the same image. I have all the Libyan people with me, and I'm prepared to die, and they are prepared to die for me, men, women, and even children. We are confronting Al-Qaeda in what they are called Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb. Nothing more. And Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb is an armed organization. And it's fighting from Libya to Mauritania, passing through Algeria and Mali. What would you do if you found them controlling American cities with the power of weapons? Tell me, how would you behave so I could follow your example? Muammar al-Gaddafi, the leader of the revolution.
And that is the letter that was issued by Muammar Gaddafi, I think, on Friday. And he's asking the question, what do you do? How do you negotiate this? And as our brother minister, Louis Farrakhan, has posed the question, how did you negotiate Ruby Ridge? How did you negotiate America, Katrina? How did you, America, negotiate the rise of violent black boys in urban neighborhoods, America? How did you negotiate a peaceful conclusion to the black power movement in America in the 60s and 70s, America? You tell me how, and I will use your example. We're going to go to 954. You're on the air. I respect you. Briefly, your comments, please.
Well, good evening, and this was very timely. And it's amazing how President Barack Obama has taken the very stands against Muammar Gaddafi. As sure as these racist supremacists, these tea baggers are taken against him. I've been in Tripoli, and I've been there during Eid when they had, we had to stand there for 10 days because we couldn't leave the country. And I've seen the cohesiveness and the dignity in these folks and how the women were leading a contingency of nurses when they sent in an American team to basically try to brainwash them into what they consider women's rights. It's amazing, though, that how many people have made money overseas in the Middle East, whether they work directly for companies or not. And you may even touch into that in this labor topic that you might discuss. My other question is, you did present a good opening on your show on the Saturday. but the spook who sat by the door, whom the principal actor I knew personally, Al Cook, Brother Lawrence Cook, and I remember reading that book. But America has handled its same dealings in this country the way they accuse the Idi Amin's, the Muammar Gaddafi's, and everyone else who now they all of a sudden think this cash cow called war is going to keep supplementing and increasing revenue, which it will for the rich. But the cannon fodder again will be the people who have no money, who have no power, and they keep getting suckered and duped into these wars.
So I'm gathering from what you're saying that you don't support our coalition activity, and you would have preferred what?
I would have preferred that we just stand down and stay abreast. Why the hell does America decide when and who's to go to war every time? Since the Europeans really had the beef with him, you know, they should have led the course. Of course, they're going to be in it for the moment, but watch how quick they're going to back out of it. No, I would not have sent in the Air Force or anything. You gave the man a warning, knowing the history of this country, knowing that he is empowered to serve his masters. Well, he can't have it both ways. He's becoming a disappointment. Just as sure as Ed Schultz will sit up here and talk about this is America, and he's in Wisconsin, and he has every right to use that, saying that this is America. I guess the rest of us aren't. I know what he's talking about, and I'm sure you do. But we cannot keep differentiating ourselves. I want to ask the audience one question. I had an experience last night when I was going to Publix. I met a Hasidic Jew, you know, the ones with the black hats and the coat. So he says to me, "Kasete Yevret." And I said, "Amina Tabere Kasete Yevret." He asked me, "Do you speak Hebrew?" And I says, "No, I speak very little Hebrew." He says, "Oh, you're Jewish?" So just to find out where this cat's coming from, for him to even ask me this, I says, by way of the motherland. He says, "Your mother's Jewish?" I says, "No, your book teaches that the father, who is a Jew, Abba, makes you a Jew, not the mother. That came after World War II, my friend." He says, "Oh, because I stop you, my friend, because it is some kind of holiday, which I don't know what it is, and anyone that is Jewish, that came from a Jewish mother, he's to give them a gift. And I'm wearing my hat, my Stenson hat, and, you know, I'm driving my Mercedes. So it made me wonder, what the hell did this guy really stop me for, you know, just to ask that in
maybe
a public parking lot? Do you know what holiday that might have been?" And I'm only bringing this out as if there's a unity that's coming or a formulation with humanity, then that's fine if it's on the true side. But I don't know what holiday he was reflecting on. But Minister Farrakhan, I mean, the man is bringing out the truth, and this is very time, and I'm glad you're bringing this up, Janice. And like I mentioned to India earlier, whatever monies I can donate and give to you cats, you know, you Alpha India, please let me know, all right? And
okay,
I will definitely
thank you,
follow up
and I'll try to get some response to some of your questions. Let me just say that Hasidic Judaism, they do have many, many holidays that celebrate this, that, and the other that are aside from the major holidays of Judaism. So I'll try to look that up for you and let you know on the India Declare show tomorrow.
All right. Well, shalom there, all right, brother. Okay.
Shalom. Okay, we're going to go to look at some of the specifics. Our number is 347-838-9852. Tonight we are asking you, should we be supporting the military action against Libya? Why, and what do you think the consequences will be?
They're for peace. They're there to destabilize the people are still gathering in Tahrir Square. They're not satisfied. Well, that fell off the radar. Then there was Bahrain. America got a naval base there. He killed some of his people, too. I didn't hear the president say, well, now, wait a minute. He did, you know, a little tepid little thing, you know. You all be careful now. You shouldn't harm people who are innocent. But after a while, he got strong on Mubarak. See, there's a frog in the dragon's mouth. When the dragon swallows a frog, you might hear it, bleep, beep, bleep, beep. But it's really the dragon talking through the frog. You didn't hear me. Barack is a good man, but he's under the control of bad people. Barack is a good man, but he's under the control of bad people. He brought some of them around him because he's a constitutional lawyer, not an economist. He brought people from Goldman Sachs. So they encouraged him to take that money and bail out Wall Street. Now they're accusing him of breaking the American economy when it was $12 trillion in debt when he got into office. They don't talk about Bush's $800 billion that he borrowed and nobody know where the hell the money went. So they're setting Obama up. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? Now, the Zionists say, look, we got a chance. Gaddafi's weak now. Let's send Hillary to Switzerland and get the United Nations to come on board so we can give a military response. So they're building up all this killing. But you don't really know that that's true. Do we? That's what they're saying. Some of it could be, but hell, you got to check a devil. You got to check a liar. And you don't have the means by which to check them because you're a slave to the corporate media of America. Isn't that a shame what he's doing to his people? Well, let me ask you a question. When your people don't have jobs and they're out of their homes and they're living in the streets, and they're angry, and they rise up. Do you think the police are coming to tell you, now just a minute, Negroes. You people, we're doing the best we can. Superintendent Weiss ordered 17,000 automatic rifles with armor-piercing bullets for the Chicago Police Department. And I asked him, what are you expecting? I didn't get an answer. I know what they're expecting. They're expecting you to rise up. And I guarantee you, they're coming. And when they come, they're coming to kill. Mark my words, white folk in America are armed to the teeth, and they're angry with their own government. Do you think that they come in to tell white Americans that are armed? Just a moment, we'll straighten it out. We're now listening to the Tea Party. Everything is going to be all right. They'll shoot them down like dogs in the street. Mark
my words, this is coming to America in a very short while. Now, President Obama, if you allow the Zionists to push you to mount a military offensive against Gaddafi, and you go in and kill him and kill his sons, as you did with Saddam Hussein and his sons, I'm warning you, this is a Libyan problem. Let the Libyans solve their problem among themselves. Now, lastly, if America goes to war, President Obama, like Franklin Delano Roosevelt, may be forced to sign an executive order that he's not fully in agreement with, to take Farrakhan off the streets and charge him with sedition and treason. I told my followers that when they come, I don't want you fighting them because they're only coming to kill you. I've been expecting them. I know what I got to go through. But I know I'm going to be the winner. That I know.
And we're hearing how Brother Minister Louis Farrakhan, more than 2 weeks ago, spoke those words. You're listening to Our Common Ground. We'll take your calls at 347-838-9852. When I come back, we'll hear from Alpha about what the current cap, today's news, is saying about the action that President Barack Obama has taken.
U.S. leaders regularly do. There is a playbook. Whenever a favored dictator is in trouble, try to sustain him. Hold on. If at some point it becomes impossible, switch sides. The U.S. has an overwhelmingly powerful role there. Egypt is the second largest recipient over a long period of U.S. military and economic aid. Israel's first.
Chomsky points out if you look at the leading recipients of U.S. aid, most of it military aid, two countries are in a separate category, Israel and Egypt, which gets half the aid given to Israel. This arrangement is part of the Camp David Agreement from back in 1979, unofficially. Aid to Egypt is basically aid to Israel, to encourage Egypt to sort of play along. But aid to Israel and Egypt is in a separate category, way above anybody else.
Obama himself has been highly supportive of Mubarak.
Justin Webb of the BBC asked Obama if he regarded President Mubarak as an authoritarian ruler. And Obama's answer was, no, I tend not to use labels for folks. He thinks Mubarak has been a force for good in the region. Chomsky points out this is the way Obama is talking about one of the most brutal dictators of the region. How can anyone take Obama's comments about human rights seriously after that?
This is one of the most brutal dictators of the region. How anyone could have taken Obama's comments about human rights seriously after that is a bit of a mystery. But the support has been very powerful in diplomatic dimensions, military. The planes flying over Tahrir Square are, of course, U.S. planes. The U.S. has been the strongest, most solid, most important supporter of the regime. It's not like Tunisia, where the main supporter was France. They're the primary guilty party there. But in Egypt, it's clearly the United States and, of course, Israel. Israel is, of all the countries in the region, Israel and, I suppose, Saudi Arabia have been the most outspoken in support of the Mubarak regime. In fact, Israeli leaders were angry, at least expressed anger, that Obama hadn't taken a stronger stand in support of their friend Mubarak.
By the way, President Sadat of Egypt had offered a full peace treaty to Israel in 1971, but Israel rejected it, and the U.S. backed Israel's rejection. Mainstream media plays along by pretending that the 1971 peace offer never existed.
You're listening to a special edition of Our Common Ground. The Black Voice Collaborative at TruthWorks Network. Tuesdays, A Heart for My People with Dr. Deborah Napier. Thursdays, Fearless Mother with Denise Bowles. And on Friday, it's India Declare After Dark, Real, Raw, and Right Now. On Saturday, it's Just Damn Radio with Alpho of the Alpho Show. TruthWorks Network at Blog Talk Radio. It's the Black Voice Collaborative. For the TruthWorks programming schedule, go to truthworks.ning.com.
Yep, we have to push our stuff, Alpho. Thank you all for being with us here on the special edition of Our Common Ground. We're talking about the military action against Libya. Should we not? What are the undercurrent issues that go with it? On our first call from New Mexico, asking the question, what's this all about? So I'm saying to you that at 347-838-9852, you can get your what the fuck moment. We're going to go to 864 just a minute, but I did want to get a recap from Alpho about the current national dialogue on this issue. I know, Alpho, that there are people in the Congress who are saying that this is an impeachable act.
Yeah. Those are the same people who were whispering impeachable act when George Bush was in office, and now they're screaming it. Not Dennis Kucinich. He screamed it from the, you know, at the top of his lungs, you know, back then. But there are other players who come into play here, and it seems to be a consensus that the media will cover this dissent, this negative on this president. Minister Farrakhan spoke very, very decisively about, you know, this entire situation. And I would think that people will come to understand that France gets about 8 to 9% of its oil from Libya, and they lay up this aerial assault. Great Britain gets about 15% of their oil from Libya. So therefore, it was a commendable thing to notice that when you get those types of interests involved in that region, you're going to get what you got. You know, this president simply followed suit. These are the interests of the allies, of the greater allies.
Well, you know, Alpho, I'm encouraging people who are listening to us that we must do a thorough assessment of means and end before pursuing any military action, whether it's in Libya or wherever. On the contrary, time is running out for intervention in Libya, and the consequences of inaction are enormous. Nothing you know out there is more tragic than not stopping a genocide from taking place when all the facts and the signs indicate that such a tragedy is about to take place. And there is the spot in America, because in American foreign policy, in American domestic policy, we all look with a chaste eye. Let's go to our phones. 864, you're on the air. Where are you calling from? I respect you. Thank you for your call.
Greenville, South Carolina. Sister, so good to hear your voice and have you back.
Hey, my sister, you know that this is running through, this is running like jello through my veins.
Please, this is so timely. Listen, can anybody say Gaza when Israel was fighting?
Can anybody say Rwanda, Haiti,
Congo,
Tunisia?
Hey, you know, it's like, what are we talking about? What the discussion is when are we going into the streets and saying we have had enough of this? Does anybody know that those Hellfire missiles or whatever, that 120 or 40, that they cost $1 million apiece, when people in this country are...
And that's $1 million when they're operated.
Okay. So, you know, what discussion is,
you know,
over.
I've heard so much nonsense going on over the last couple of days, which is why I decided to do this this special. And I decided to use Minister Farrakhan's Savior's Day presentation to help us find some balance in this.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
there are people dying, but guess what? As many people in the first week in Egypt were threatened, 100 times more people died in Haiti.
Please.
$15 million?
Please.
So,
please.
I'm, you know, all I can do is say to myself, is to say to my brain, halt. There's something in the water here. And water and what doesn't mix? So it's coming to, I don't think, Afia, that people are as confused by this as they are conflicted by it.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
I don't like to see people where there could be some serious consequences of dying in conflict, in civil conflict. But at the same time, let's not call it genocide.
I think people know that the line that Obama is and company is running is bullshit. There is no doubt about the fact that they were totally silent when Israel was dropping 1,500-pound bombs on apartment buildings, on schools, on clinics, on UN buildings. The United States, the Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, none of them said a single solitary word. But the truth of the matter is, for all the people who keep making excuses for Obama, this is Obama's history. You know, Obama, John Burge, who tortured over 100 young black males, most of whom wound up on death row in Illinois, was in Obama's district, and it's not like he didn't know. He never said a mumbling word, nothing, Mr. Constitutional Lawyer, about torture, wrongful convictions. Obama is an opportunist, and he is playing it to the hilt. The question is, are we going to return to the ethical standard, the conscience of this country that we used to be? There is a civil war going on in Libya that the United States has stirred up, and we cannot allow our tax dollars to be diverted to a land and resource grab, because that's all it is, and we all know that. And it is time for us to hit the street, even if it's nothing but to be at our individual federal buildings in our local towns.
Well, if you look at the list that Wesley Clark lays out, The last on the list is Iran. The first on the list is Iraq, Libya. But it didn't say Egypt. If you notice, Egypt was not on the list. But it all has to do with oil-rich countries. Every one of those countries. And it all has to do with a sovereignty that is truly sovereign.
And that's Iran. That's right. Exactly. Everyone in every one of those countries, the government has raised the people from illiterate, feudal serfs to high literacy, technologically competent people and countries. It's the same thing with Iraq. Those people in those countries, it's free education and health care from the cradle to the grave. And if they can't provide it in-house, they paid for citizens to go elsewhere. They brought in Africans. All these, this thing about these mercenaries, they're not mercenaries. They are sub-Saharan Africans who have come to Libya to assist with the oil fields because Libya would not be subject to European, and I don't think that the issue of race should be overlooked, that we got three white Christian countries invading and occupying a country of color, a North African, an African country. They can talk that Middle East stuff all they want to. It's an African country.
This is the first time in the history of this country, the history of the world, that there has been a major assault by Americans on an African country, given all the stuff has gone on in Africa. I mean, when the Somali pirates were trying to recover from economic genocide, they didn't send in any bombers, drones, nothing. You know, the other real question for us is this. Have we adequately considered, has this president adequately considered the innumerable things that can go wrong once this bombing started? Are the cost to the U.S. in treasure, if not blood? Especially at a time when our economy is in the tank, the Obama administration has frozen the wages of underpaid public servants, and Republican governors are abrogating the rights of American workers to collectively bargain with their government employers. The last thing this nation needs is another war anywhere, and certainly not in the Arab world. And, you know, it's this whole notion of here's an administration, here's a political thing. And New Mexico, if you're listening, you're talking, you're listening to someone who's called onto this show who understands the international issues of justice and landscape. And if you'll notice that no one is talking about the issue of we're broke.
Hey, please. No, we're broke. The people who are going to benefit from this invasion and occupation are not broke. They have managed to capture the majority of the wealth, not only in this country, but in the world, and will become richer as a result of this. We're broke. The majority of the people are broke, but the people who make the decision, the ruling class, is not broke. They are wealthier than they have ever been. The gap between the haves and the have-nots in the United States, more than any other technologically advanced country, has widened precipitously, dangerously, over the past well, 10 years, 8 years that what's-his-face was in office and accelerated in the past 2 years under Obama. So, no, we not broke. They not broke.
You know,
we're broke.
And the thing is, our reputation is so bad in the Muslim world, many people can be easily persuaded to believe the worst about Americans, even if our intentions are honorable. The other question that I have is, no one has raised the questions between the Nubian Libyans and the Arabs.
Right, that's right. You got it. You
Gaddafi
got it.
Sent his son to Harvard Business School.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you all sending your son next year?
Mm-hmm. Hey,
you
if
know,
they're not
and those are the questions that we have to answer. There was no other country that needed us most, U.S. direct humanitarian need, than Haiti last year.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have $15 million. So
mm-hmm.
what are we buying? What we
mm-hmm.
This is, you know, it's Afia and Alfo, and for those of you out there, it's so hard. I mean, I've been through this shit. Going into Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. That's
I've been
right.
here. This is Obama's Vietnam. This is how John F. Kennedy, most people think that it was a Kennedy and a Nixon war. It was not. John F. Kennedy went into Vietnam in the same way that Barack Obama is going into Libya.
That's exactly right. Behind the French, no less.
Thank you. It was a French war before we went in. We went
That's
in
right.
to coalesce with France.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
here we are again. And there was no other country that needed us most than Somalia. And we screwed that up because the Bush
mm-hmm.
administration, CIA, and military operations under, didn't he just die, Christopher? Those people wanted us to fail in Somalia. But I tell you one thing, the real fear, I'm going to have to whisper this, the real fear is the Chinese are taking over the continent of Africa and America's
right.
got to get the oil before they do.
That's right. And they never forgave Gaddafi for nationalizing the Libyan oil and then having the audacity to not spend it on his family and his cronies, but to actually spend it on the people. And South Africa, somebody needs to talk to them. How could they vote to support this?
The thing is, it's the same reason that Brother Minister Farrakhan has to sit this one kind of out, because Nelson Mandela and the NRC were friends with Gaddafi. Gaddafi knew it. Gaddafi had one of the best global public relations campaigns going.
Mm-hmm.
He dropped a couple of $1 million on the Million Man March.
Mm-hmm.
He dropped a couple of million. He dropped a million or so dollars to keep the what's Randall Robinson's organization?
Trans Africa
moving.
Mm-hmm.
He knew who to drop the dime on.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are. And there is no doubt, I don't care what anybody says, this Gaddafi man, you know, he's had what could be called a couple of errors. You know,
human.
He's had one era where he was progressive, another era where he was global. And now he's in, you know, he's woven himself into some Western intervention because there is an imperialist, gross imperialist narrative going on in his country. And it's he sees it as an intervention to steal Libyan oil, I am sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, this humanitarian intervention is a controversial tactic. The international community should consider a course of action in Libya, but whether or not it should be military is way, way down the road, but it's too late now. There is no thorough assessment going on here. Afia, thank you so much. I know you just summarize where you are and where you think people ought to be thinking.
Well, first of all, let me say again, thank you for having this opportunity because, you know, I've been on the verge of having a stroke. I've been so enraged. In fact, I had decided that tomorrow or Wednesday, when there's going to be a national day of action in opposition to the war against Libya, to go to the federal building and burn a flag, a U.S. flag on the steps, because that's the only way you'd be able to break through the this den of propaganda that's being put out there, not information, propaganda. I think that we need to stand with Gaddafi regardless. There's a brother named, young brother named JR, who calls himself the Minister of Information for Fred Hampton Jr.'s organization. People can, and it's called the Block Report. He did an interview with.
The Block Report, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. He did an interview with a brother who lived in Libya and who runs the history of Gaddafi, of the Jamhuriya, and of Gaddafi's support of liberation movements around the world generally and of African people specifically. We need to, and we have the opportunity to educate ourselves and not to rely on the corporate media and be prepared and start taking steps. If it's nothing but to call our federal elected officials,
your congressional caucus,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Congressional and senatorial representatives, and say, I got a problem with this. You know, can you say Gaza? We have got to return to the moral standing that we held in this country by demanding that the right thing be done. And the right thing is not for the United States to interject itself into a civil war that it stirred up in the first place. Because that is precisely what happened there and what is happening across the so-called Middle East. And not allow ourselves to get sucked into the hysteria and the histrionics and the hypocrisy. One last thing that I will say, the United States reputation is not poor just in Middle East or Muslim countries. One of the things that was very striking about being involved in the Universal Periodic Review process was the number of countries from Europe to the tip of Africa, from the Eastern Hemisphere to the Western Hemisphere. The United States got an unprecedented 228 criticisms from around the world. And we were the lightning rod, meaning we Africans in the U.S., the descendants of formerly enslaved Africans, from the lack of access to education, health care, to disproportionate incarceration and the conditions of incarceration, and there was call after call after call for release of political prisoners. And I thank you and the folk who participated in the flash actions, the firestorm for political prisons, because they are definitely on the world's agenda at this point in time. We cannot be silent On this issue, we cannot be silent. We are too often silent on the question of foreign policy. We have got to speak up, even if it's nothing but making a phone call to Congress people, senatorial people, radio. We have got to break the silence on this.
Well,
thank
we've
you.
Certainly... Thank you so much. We've certainly got to get it right. That was Afia Ingangwaza from the U.S. Human Rights Network. And what we want to suggest to you, there are two things that I'm suggesting to this audience. If you want to understand more about what the history of Libya, the history of Muammar Gaddafi and his relationship in America, Foreign Policy in Focus, FPIF.org, there is a strategic dialogue going on about Libya. We suggest that. And for many of you who are interested in understanding what's going on in Libya from a pan-African perspective, getting Libya right, we suggest NathanielTurner.com. Nathaniel Turner, that's Chicken Bones. That's what he calls himself.
Yeah.
And he has done a great deal of research in regard to Libya. We're going to pick up some more information, and I want you to take a look further at what Brother Minister Farrakhan, Louis Farrakhan, has to say about our military action in Libya.
Mention Brother Gaddafi for a minute. I don't know what's going on in Libya. I haven't been there in a while. But Muammar Gaddafi has always been my friend. And people tell me that I should distance myself from my brother. See, I'm not that kind of punctified Negro. I said earlier, there's nothing more painful than civil war. Do you know how much money the Congress of the United States spent? Over $150 to $200 million for regime change in Iran. You don't spend that kind of money and not be in a man's house working with those who are dissatisfied. I want to ask you a question. Name me one king, one ruler that has 100% of the love of his people. Name one. Come on.
You can't find one. That is Israel's war. What kind of leader will you be, or should I be, to allow these babies, black, white, and brown, to fight Israel's war because Zionists dominate the government of the United States of America and her banking system?
We have given America the best that we have in Barack Obama.
We don't agree with everything he's doing, but the way Mr. Obama has been mistreated impacts on every black person and the whites and the Hispanics and others who voted for him. With the help of right-minded people, He could probably help America to solve a lot of its problems. But he was selected for a purpose.
Go ahead, brother. Oh. Go ahead.
And that purpose was not to be the champion of the rights of black people.
Right.
You must remember he's the head of a corporation.
That's right. That's right.
That I don't think he owns any stock in. He's the corporate head. He's the CEO of the United States of America, meaning a black man is in charge of white affairs. We've seen those types before. I'm the first to be the CEO of Merrill Lynch. I'm the first. So you want us to bow down because you're taking care of somebody else's business while your own people don't have a job? You want us to bow down? I'm proud that we elected him. And if he never does anything, he did it all when he freed the minds of our children to think that they can be more than basketball players and football players and runners and jumpers and musicians and sports people. He freed the minds of our babies to think that we can become world rulers. And if he never does anything else, that's all right. He didn't campaign as the black leader. That's what you say you are. Well, damn it, get up and leave then. Well, he's the president. He should be able to do something for us. Yeah, he should. But between him and the program of TARP, Trouble Assets Relief Program, there's a whole bureaucracy of racism. So when the money is released, you're the last one to get anything if you get anything. So there's anger building in America against our brother. He's not really an American. He's not born here. He's really a Muslim, trying to tell the people he's a Christian. They paint him now as Adolf Hitler. Yes, they do. They paint him as the Joker. They mock his wife. That hurts us all. Now, these are my words for our brother president. See, in 1942, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was sent to prison because President Roosevelt issued an executive order to take him off the streets while America was prosecuting a war. And America needed some black bodies to go and fight a war, even though there was no benefit for us in fighting such a war. So that means they're calling us. 35 to 50. Hell, they might call you when you're 60. We got trouble over there. Your country needs you. Say, damn, now you need us? We needed a job. We ain't seen one. We need justice. We don't have none. You're killing our people in the streets. What about that? You're taxing the hell out of us. We're losing our homes because you tricked us. Where's any relief for us? Well, don't worry. Just fight this war, and when it's over, things are going to get better for you.
Do you think that they're afraid of my...
This is a special edition of Our Common Ground, speaking truth to power, Libya and labor. I'm Janice Graham, and we'll be right back. I'll be listening for you.
I'm wishing on a star to follow where you are. I'm wishing on a dream to follow what it means. Yeah, and I wish on all the rainbows.
Hi out there, this is Janice Graham of Our Common Ground. Want to remind you of some of the terrific broadcast shows available to all you talkers. The India Declare Show, Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. and Saturday at 11 a.m. The Alpha Show, every Saturday, 3 p.m. And following that 3 p.m. broadcast, he's at TruthWorks Network at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And don't forget of all the audio documentary being provided at TruthWorks Network here at Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Graham, and I'm sure me and my friends will be listening for you.
The entire region could be destabilized, endangering many of our allies and partners. The calls of the Libyan people for help would go unanswered. The democratic values that we stand for would be overrun. Moreover, the words of the international community would be rendered hollow. That's why the United States has worked with our allies and partners to shape a strong international response at the United Nations. Our focus has been clear. Let me be clear. These terms are not negotiable. These terms are not subject to negotiation. If Gaddafi does not comply with the resolution, the international community will impose consequences, and the resolution will be enforced through military action.
And we want to thank you for being with us here on this special edition of Our Common Ground. Our number is 347-838-9852. Our board, our phones, we have room for you to give us a call. Alpha, you know, one of the things that is striking me at the heart of how I'm thinking about the U.S., I mean, the U.S. is saying that we are not taking the leadership, but in fact we are. We are considered the largest, most powerful military operation in the world. So for us to say we're not taking the lead is silly. The other is that the president and the secretary of state has consistently said over the last 3 days that there will be no boots on the ground. How is that possible?
Well, first thing, let me say this. There is no oil in the Gulf of Mexico. Okay?
Oh, they blasted all that away, huh?
Right, right. I mean, from one unbelievable scenario to another unbelievable scenario. This is just, it's not going to happen. And this is something that they've played over the airwaves. It's that here is a situation where the rebel forces are such a ragtag bunch that there was a report from one of the boots-on-the-ground reporters there that he was searching out the leader of the rebel movement. And he had taken the day off, and he was at home with his family. Now you tell me. The others are simply volunteers, and it reports that when the fighting starts, they take off and run. So here you have a ragtag group of rebels, simply civilian protesters against the, I would say, the forces of, you know, the Gaddafi army. So they are no match. So boots on the ground are going to be necessary, be it advisors, be it as someone who simply has to teach these rebel forces.
Advisors can't stop any bullets.
Well, see,
what are they going to be on the ground for? If I can sit here on my perch atop Boston and talk to people from all over the world, why do advisors got to be? You know, this is all so confusing. I hear what you're saying. It is impossible because the war is on the ground. The resistance is on the ground. Now, here's my other question, Alpha, and you help me sort this out. I think news coverage by the BBC, CNN, and Al Jazeera has been oversimplified and in many ways misleading. Thousands of Indians, Egyptians, Chinese, Filipinos, Turks, Germans, English, Italians, Malaysians, Koreans, and a host of other nationalities are lining up at the borders and the airport to leave Libya. It begs the question, what were they doing in Libya in the first place? Unemployment figures, according to the Western media and Al Jazeera, is at 30%. If this is so, then why were all these foreign workers there? You know, for people, and I've talked to a couple of people who have lived and worked in Libya, there are many complexities to this situation that have been completely overlooked by the American and Western media, as I say, West-toxicated analysts, who have nothing other than a Eurocentric perspective to draw on. And we need to be very clear. There is no possibility of understanding what is happening in Libya within a Eurocentric framework. People in this country are so incapable of understanding a system unless the system emanates from or is attached in some way to America. Libya's system and the battle now taking place in its land, on its soil, stands completely outside of the American imagination, completely. So the first question is, in regard to all of that, and I know that was a lot, and I do want to get back to some of the things that Minister Farrakhan has to say, and for those of you who would like to join us in this conversation, our number is 347-838-9852. Here is the question. Is the revolt taking place in Libya fueled by some concern over economic issues such as poverty and unemployment, as the U.S. and Eurocentric media would have us believe? I'm not so sure. Large-scale housing construction has taken. This is a country that in 1951 was officially the poorest country in the world. But there have been large-scale housing construction, large-scale agricultural projects, and today Libya can boast one of the finest healthcare systems in the Arab and African world. No system is perfect, and Libya is no exception. So my question is, what is this revolt about? Who are these people?
Well, you got tons and tons of world there, and as you said, the quality is high. And the move itself is speciously drawn to that question of oil. And when you get right down to it, you know, you have to look at it, you know, the defiance of Muammar Gaddafi is puzzling to me, to a point of he learned, I thought he learned his lesson when they tried to take him out and killed one of his offspring. I believe a daughter or wife or something. They killed people in his family. You know, he toyed and dealt with the nuclear aspect. Then it had something to do with the Lockerbie bombing, which they got someone to conveniently say that he was 100% involved and he authorized it, you know, simply further vilifying him to the American public. You know, you can't speak his name and say good things about Muammar Gaddafi without drawing the ire of the mainstream media and the American.
You have gotten to something that is very fundamental, Alpha.
You vilify the person.
But
you want
he's vilified
to take
also in Africa. You
yes.
know, the battle being waged in Libya is a battle between Pan-African forces on one hand, who are dedicated to the realization of what Gaddafi has always said is his vision, and that is a united Africa, and reactionary racist Libyan Arab forces who reject Gaddafi's vision of Libya as part of a united Africa because they want to ally themselves instead with the European Union and look toward Europe and the Arab world. And some of the things over the years, many of the Libyan people of means did not approve of his move toward championing Libyans toward Africa and his determined drive to unite Africa with one currency, one army, and a shared vision. It specifically, and for those of you who are listening to this broadcast, go back and look at the large amounts of contributions in time, energy, and money to those ideals. And like Kwame Nkrumah, and Gaddafi has paid a huge price. Libyan people who were looking to become Europeanized didn't like him. So I think that this is an old war. I think it is a very old war. You know, I've been looking for people. I've been trying to hold back on my opinion about this at 347-838-9852. But here we go because we're going to just take this entire show to deal with Libya. And I promise all of you in the chat room, if you are listening, all of you in the chat room, we'll have to do Wisconsin and labor tomorrow night. It is time for war because the first casualty of war is truth. And one of the things that I hate about this whole thing, Alpha, is that we have our first African-American president who is taking the first shot, the first major assault on an African country. I hate that, and they can cry. They can tell us anything, but this, as Wesley Clark said, do I have to play it over again? Five countries in 5 years. Iraq was the first on the list. Iran is the last on the list, and Libya is the third on the list. That was the plan. And guess why? Alpha, you're not going to ask me why?
It's got to be oil.
I'm not as scared of you. What is that thing I'm supposed to say?
Oh, no, again, it's
you know what's scared of me.
instead of me.
Gaddafi has always been very vocal regarding the plight of Africans who migrate to Europe. You know, we've got to look at how this counter-revolutionary vault caught everyone off guard by surprise. It sure as hell. When they said Saturday that they were going to be bombing Libya, they caught me by surprise, and I said to myself, okay, the time can't change again, and I can't sleep late again because this is crazy. They knew what the media is not reporting, that unlike Egypt and Tunisia and other countries in the region where there is tremendous poverty, unemployment, and repressive pro-Western regimes, the Libyan dynamic was entirely different. I hope you're still listening, New Mexico, because here we go. This was a deliberate attempt to embarrass Gaddafi. They thought they would embarrass him. They thought they would undermine his efforts in Africa. He's been a long thorn in the Islamist side. Alpha, if you will recall, in a recent address to the Libyan people, which was broadcast, it was bombed by Reagan in 1986. He asked the bearded ones in Benghazi and Jabhat al-Aqsa where they were when Reagan bombed this compound in Tripoli, killing hundreds of Libyans, including his daughter. He said they were hiding in their homes, applauding the U.S., and he vowed that he would never allow the country to be returned to the grip of them and their colonial masters. That is what he said. Al-Qaeda is in the Sahara on his borders, and the International Union of Muslim Scholars is calling for him to be tried in a court. And we have to ask, why are they calling for Gaddafi's blood? Why not? Why not months ago, Mubarak, who closed the Rafah border crossing while the Israelis slaughtered the Palestinians in Gaza? Why not Bush? Why not Cheney? Why not Rumsfeld and Blair, who are responsible for the murder of millions of Muslims in Iraq and Afghanistan? And the simple answer is because Gaddafi committed some cardinal sin, he dared to challenge their reactionary and feudal notions of Islam. Answer my own question. I'll be right back.
That was Cleveland.
Y'all know I always got the backup. Got a call, 954, you're on the air. I respect you, where you're calling from, and thank you for your call.
from one of your places, Florida. They're a great one.
Aronde, you don't get to call twice in one show.
Well,
I'm
lucky because I held on for you gracefully for 2 hours, but that's not your fault. But I was worthwhile hanging on anytime. And if I'm overseas, I'm going to hang on. But I just want to say this. The book that you may want to ponder getting was written by Muammar Gaddafi. It's called The Green Book. When I was over there.
Green Book. Absolutely.
Green Book.
Yes.
And I just want to say this.
Thank you for reminding me about that. It rejects the unfettered capitalism in all its manifestations, including the state capitalism of the former communist countries and the neoliberal capitalist model that has been imposed on a global level. You're absolutely right. See, I need callers to get me going.
Well, you see, sister, I messed around and procrastinated. When I was in Libya at one of his hotels, I didn't get the book. I said, well, I'll be back here within the next week, and it didn't happen. So that's don't procrastinate, y'all. That's number one. The second thing is we had a black man that used to be a Negro called Cassius Clay who refused to fight the Vietnam War, right? And I'm saying this. Our revolution, our point of awareness is, I don't know where you were in 67 when they came, the Vietnam vets told us don't go to Vietnam. So I'm not the first one that's highlighting and amplifying this point about talking to veterans, because if these leaders, so-called leaders of us, we need to do what's been done in Thailand. And I think Muammar Gaddafi and the king of Thailand are probably the oldest modern day rulers that we know of right now. You know, we need to touch and tap on the sources who are going to be cannon fodder, the ground fighters. And these rich people, they think they're going to get away with this. If Japan's having this setback now. The dollar ain't shit nowhere right now. And perhaps Andre Eglashan can expound on this a little better. They're not going to have nowhere to retreat to and go. You know, so the wealth in this country need to stop and realize this. And the Chinese have been capitalizing and building in Africa. And I'm not saying that's bad. I see what good has been done. And I was in Ethiopia, which is half Muslim and half Christian, you know. But what I would love to ask the nation, you know, Elijah Muhammad did not want to split. He wanted to separate ourselves. Minister Farrakhan could have been very well off in an African country easily. And I don't understand why they didn't maximize that expeditus to do that.
Yeah.
Now the Chinese have done it. And I've seen where Dubai, Bahrain, and these places have hoarded in construction workers, you know, and paid them in the Philippines. Just as sure as Americans was over there. The base in Bahrain is shut down, that Navy base. I was there right after 9/11.
But I thought that there were 8 military installations in Bahrain.
Well, the Navy was the biggest one. They might have some little satellite thing that's happening there. But I've been in and out of there in cargo as a civilian. And I don't make nowhere near the money these private cats are making, you know, because of working with a American company, which I'm trying to get away from. But, Janice, I hope one day you expound on this income tax thing about claiming 12 people, and because that might be the thing to go ahead and just blow these suckers out of the water.
It's very simple. It's a very simple notion. Mm-hmm. Every person has the right during the course of the year to claim 12 dependents, a maximum of 12 dependents. That's legal. You can do that legally.
Now, what's the other ramifications or pros and cons?
The ramifications is that the United States government will not take enough taxes to cover your rate of income tax.
Mm-hmm.
So at the time when you file, you will find that you probably owe them money.
Right.
Okay. But what I'm suggesting is you do it for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And you put aside the money.
Because what you said had a gruff tone to my ears.
I mean,
and for in Mexico, I was down in Roswell. I was helping to sell an aircraft to these Malaysian Muslim brothers. And I was in Albuquerque and Rosa. I'd never been there before until that time, just before I went over to do this Hajj gig. And we got whited out. It was a serious snowstorm. I mean, it was a whiteout. Normally it would take an hour to drive from Roswell to Albuquerque, right, and clear sunny day. Man, it took me like 8 hours moving at 2 to 5 miles an hour. I didn't know where to stop or go. And these Malaysian cats never seen snow, let alone a blizzard. And the crime rate that's in Mexico, New Mexico, Roswell and Albuquerque really blew my mind, man. You know, so I hope he's aware and what's going on there, you know, because he seems like he might be a conscious fellow. But let's, what did you do in 67, man? Because
in
I remember Fred Hampton, you know, all that Chicago, New York AIDS stuff.
In 67, I was hitchhiking, taking trains, taking buses between Boston and North Carolina and New York, and Yale. Yale was pretty much the base where all my political activities, and I participated in the organization of May Day. In 67 for the city of Boston at Boston Common.
Boston.
I was one of those people who hung out.
I had a sweetheart up there in Roxbury. You said hitchhiking.
Yeah.
You really bring back some memories now. You remember Interlock Mass? Stockbridge Mass? Great Barrington, Pittsville?
Don't tell my grandchildren.
Okay.
Because I look back at that and say, you know, I really ought
you
to be dead
that,
by
then.
Now. Yeah, right. You could do that then. Got to go, Aronde. I'll talk to you tomorrow night right here at 10 o'clock.
Don't Our forget the New England clam baker.
I won't. Alpha C, Aronde called twice tonight. He got a real treat. Our number here at Our Common Ground in this special talking about Libya is 347-838-9852. We want to remind you that we're not going to get labor, and it is so important that we'll be right back here tomorrow night. I will co-host while Alpha hosts here at Our Common Ground. Right, Alpha? I mean, somebody that's been broken down to one TV can handle. But I do want to encourage progressive scholars all over the world, even including in America, have acclaimed the Green Book as an incisive, a very insightful, a very powerful critique of capitalism and the Western parliamentary model of multi-party democracy. Just the analysis, getting you to understand, if you want to understand, what are these people really talking about when they talk about democracy, you can find out in the Green Book. There's no denying that the system of direct democracy posited by Gaddafi in the Green Book, it really does offer an alternative model and solution for Africa and the Third World, where multi-party so-called democracy has just been a failure, resulting in poverty, ethnic and tribal conflict, and chaos. Alpha, and that may be part, in my mind, of the political motivation here. Our number is 347-838-9852. I find it very interesting that our president, the president who a month ago we were talking about and had no spine, that he's essentially declared war in an African country. Now, do we put our spine on when we put our pants on, and sometimes you could take the spine out and put the pants on? What, Alpha, explain it to me.
Well, the spine that he's gathered is a spine of the corporate master. He has no problem gaining a spine when it comes to doing the bidding of the master, nor does he have a problem with gaining a spine when it comes back to pushing back against his progressive liberal base, the people who brought him to the dance. He never has a problem with a spine then. He only has a problem with a spine when it comes to pushing back against the people who want him to fail and who are pushing him to fail. He seems to be playing by a book of, well, the corporations and the people, the shadow government has my back, and I can do a second term because they will see to it. Because from what it seems, the field against him, the people who are lining up to run against him, are much like that ragtag rebel group in Libya. They have no rudder, they have no leadership, and there's not one who stands head and shoulders above the other. Jim Palenzi just threw his hat, so-called, halfway, stuck a toe into the ring. Him and Nuta are testing the temperature of the water. And with what Palenzi has a history of him saying, just in the last 3 or 4 months, should eliminate him for consideration because of his bigoted and biased approach to the civil rights of the of some American people. So this is where you are. This is where we are with putting your pants on and having a spine. And exactly who do you push back on? You can't push back on everything, but he needed to push back on the people who are trying to destroy him, and that's what he's not getting.
Well, one of the things that is truly upsetting is that it's clear that this is about preserving our positioning, our posture, so that we are able to have access to oil in Libya. But do not get it confused, folks out there. Do not get it confused. It will do nothing to bring your oil price down. It is about, as Noam Chomsky said, it is about who controls the oil. Here you go.
The concern of the United States in the region is basically oil. It was recognized since the 1940s that the Arabian Peninsula is the major source of energy, cheap, easily accessible energy for the next several generations, and that whoever controls that oil will basically dominate the world.
That is the bottom line. It's about oil and money. It's about oil and wealth, and it is not about whether or not Americans get a break. The other thing that I hope that you take away from this conversation about Libya, I think that no one should be clear. No one should be confused, and we need to get it right. The battle in Libya is not about peaceful protesters versus an armed and hostile state. All sides are heavily armed and hostile. The battle being waged in Libya is essentially a battle between those who want to see united and liberated Libya and Africa free of neo-colonialism and neoliberal capitalism, and free to construct their own system of governance compatible with the African and Arab personalities and cultures, and those who find this entire notion repugnant. And both sides are willing to pay the ultimate price to defend their positions, and that is what Brother Minister Louis Farrakhan is saying to this president: be careful. Be careful about what you are doing.
Go into Libya if you want to. The Libyans do not want foreign occupation on their land. And when you make that kind of move, if you're not careful, you unite the Libyan people against you. What did you do in Waco? What did you do when your people rose up. Did you talk them out of it? No. They had weapons. You bombed them. What did you do in Philadelphia with the movement? Did you talk them out of their home or did you bomb them? We didn't hear any outcry from you religious hypocrites that love the lives of human beings. You're a liar and a hypocrite. And I warn my brother, don't you let these wicked demons move you in a direction that will absolutely ruin your future with your people in Africa and throughout the world. They don't like the way you handle Mubarak. They don't like the way you're handling the situation in the Arab world. So I would advise you to be careful and move with wisdom and skill. My advice.
And there you go, Alpha. I think that's some staid advice. I think that that is some staid advice that you, but I think the opportunity also has been lost. Didn't move fast enough on Haiti. Didn't move fast enough on the and with steel spine on health care, didn't move fast enough or with resolve on tax cuts for the rich, but moved like a stealth bomber on Libya. What the is up with that?
Well, Janet,
you hearing me, Alpha?
Absolutely right. Like I said, my criticism of this president and this administration has been just that. All of the things you named, he did not move fast enough on, thus frustrating and demoralizing his base. And that's what brought us the midterm defeat, the shellacking, as he put it, which lends credence
right.
to him caving and giving in on tax breaks for the wealthy. And now they're trying to balance and starve out the people of this nation who work, who are the poor, and the women. They're simply starving them out.
That's right. That's right. And Alpha, tomorrow night, are you going to be with me? You going to be with me, my brother that I love, that I can't, you know, I can't beg a German chocolate cake and send to you. But I can have my husband call you and beg you to come on the air.
Somebody may be SOL. And I was kind of looking forward to hearing Dr. Deborah.
Oh, that's right. But Dr. Deborah will be coming behind her.
Oh,
10 o'clock.
Dr.
Yeah.
Deborah said,
don't forget, tomorrow night we'll be right back here talking about labor. I apologize for having to exhaust this issue. Thank you for being with us tonight, Alpha. Thank you, and we'll see you tomorrow night at 10 o'clock. Don't forget it, TruthWorks Network, tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Dr. Deborah's going to be talking about teachers and poor people and what's happening in Detroit. We'll see you then.
I'm in the front line of this battle of mine.
But when I leave, you can remember I said the last words on my lips. I am a revolutionary. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletarian. I am the people. I'm not the big.
Thank you for being with us here at Our Common Ground tonight on our special, Libya and Labor. I'm Janice Graham. We're here every Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Our Common Ground, speaking truth to power and ourselves. War is upon us. The first casualty of war
It's true. I'll be listening for you.